It's all fun and games until someone pops a vocal cord trying to imitate Nathan Queen on the Fish Golf Broadcast. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I welcome in Joey Tomalley. We'll hear from Joey a little bit more about baseball, specifically the AL. But right now, we're waiting out a weather delay at the Open at Austin. And, well, it seemed like a great time to podcast. Joey, what you thinking about?
Right now, I am thinking about all the interesting things that we could talk about. Thinking about this weather and that today is the last kind of like work day for me. And then, you know, get a week off. So I'm looking forward to U.S. Women's. Feeling good. It's nice to be here in Austin. Obviously, it'd be nice to be playing, but this is probably the next best thing.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get our opportunity today. Mm-hmm. Something that I think is really interesting about your story as a player is that you've been on tour, but not strictly as a player.
Right, yeah. This is my 6th year on tour, but only my 2nd as a player. I toured in 2021, and then yeah, this will be year 2 as a player.
Can you share what you were doing when you were on tour but doing other stuff?
Yeah, I've done a lot of other things. I started out as an 18-year-old on a gap year in South America, and my local buddy that I knew in Minnesota, Craig Stenzel, had this production company, Parse Productions. Mm-hmm. And I found out that they got contracted or hired by the tour to be their in-house media company. And so I basically sent a message and was just like, I will sleep on the floor and eat Hot Pockets. I will do whatever it takes to be on tour, because at the time I knew that my game was absolutely not anywhere remotely near a touring game. But I felt like the best thing I could do to get there was to take this chance and like be on tour and absorb, you know, great disc golf and just like understand it. And I think not everybody thinks about it that way. Cause I mean, if you look at Ezra, right? I mean, he decided he wanted to get good and he just like stayed at home and just like went to a field. And I was just like, I just want to be out there. Like I kept telling everyone, this is just me. I'm just getting my foot in the door. I don't know what I'm going to do after this, but I'm just going to do it. So I started out like setting up the courses. So before we had like a full ops staff, it was me. And I like set up the entire course, all the assets, all the walls by myself. It usually would take me like 4 10-hour days to like do the whole course with the triple Mando. We only had one back then, those big trusses and all the feather banners. It was a lot of work. And then I would sell t-shirts, like I would be the merch guy during the weekend, but that only happened for one event, because then they decided that it was cheaper to have me and teach me how to film disc golf. And so I started doing camera work at Waco.
For whom?
For the Disc Golf Network, because I was just an employee of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, basically. Okay. They basically just like purchased Parsave as a company, and then like I was on Pro Tour salary, and so they just like moved me wherever they needed me. So it started out as like asset guy, and I kind of that stayed basically for at least half of the 2019 season, and all sorts of camera jobs. Like it was a lot of throw cam, but I mean, on the Disc Golf Network you move around, they try to switch it up a lot, so any type of camera. I was doing the interview like booth, and then after my touring season in 2021, I did a lot of freelance work during that year for Jomez and Eagle. I ran Eagle's YouTube channel, or just like helped him make the videos. And then, yeah, did a lot of gigs for Jomez, and that resulted in like a full-time offer for 2022, which I took and did that. And then obviously Jomez and the Pro Tour merged, so I became a Pro Tour employee. I've done almost everything you can think of, like in the pro disc golf scene, besides like winning as a player. But I've done a lot of hats. I think everybody who works in the industry wears a lot of hats.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I've had Brian Earhart, I've had Nate Perkins, I've had numerous other folks on this podcast who have talked about like that they don't want to get pigeonholed into one thing. They want to be a part that can be shifted around. Mm-hmm. Because then that makes them indispensable.
Right. Of course. And for me, like I have pretty severe ADHD, which, I mean, is like a blessing and a curse, obviously. But, you know, for me, like, it means that I love variety. And, like, no matter how much I like something, once I, like, get really good at it and then do it over and over and over again, like, at some point I'm going to get burned out, like, no matter. So, like, you know, at the beginning, like, the second round of disc golf I ever filmed at Waco in 2019 was Paul shooting 18 under par. That was the second round I filmed. And then I was, like, the official scorecard person, the PDGA live guy for James's throw-in. So I was, like, 10 feet away from him. And I did, like, I was, like, standing in the front row seat for dozens upon dozens of Pro Tour events and cool finishes. And, like, sort of couldn't believe that, like, I got burned out on doing on T-Cam. Because, like, how many people would kill for that, right? And, like, because it is the best spectator seat in the house. Obviously, like, you're not watching. Like, I'm not watching.
I have no idea what the scores are.
Like, I can tell if somebody's playing bad, but I'm, like, and I'm really not, like, I can appreciate great shots, but most of the time I'm just trying to keep the disc in frame and,
right,
you know, do my job. And also, I have a earphone in, so I'm not, like, even listening to the round. Like, the audio is completely different for me. I've got chatter and a bunch of other stuff going on, so... Yeah, the burnout was real, and I think being able to do all these different things has really allowed me to, like, continue to enjoy working in pro disc golf. And obviously this year, like, I'm, you know, making another shift and doing more new things. And I think as long as I keep trying to find new things to do, I think Nate and Brian, like, feel the same way, just, like, experimenting with new stuff. And right now in the industry is a perfect time to do it, because people who can do a lot of things are highly valued at this point in kind of the infancy of the disc golf industry.
Yeah, no doubt. And, like, quick plug, I keep hearing video editors. Everybody needs that right now. Like,
yes.
if you can do that and do it well and do it fast and do it accurately, there is a place for you in disc golf. Mm-hmm. So, Joey, I got to imagine that being front and center to some of those, like, historic rounds or shots in the growth of disc golf just, like, kept stoking your interest in being a touring player. Like, you got in the door, like, with a give me anything attitude. Mm-hmm. It's like, how much hungrier did Conrad's throw in make you?
Yeah, I mean, that was insane. That I remember, like, that night, me and Eagle, like, sitting in the sauna at, like, near our little Airbnb, and we were just like, what can we possibly do now that's going to, like, match up to what we just saw? I mean, that's, like, we both just, like, sat there and we were just like, that may be the greatest thing we will ever see in our lives. Like, we honestly were just like, it might not ever get better than that. And, like, that is just, were you there?
Oh, yeah.
Where were you standing?
I was in the bleachers.
Okay.
And there were some locals, and I was like, he can't lay this up. He has to just go for it. He has to try to throw it in. And it happened 10 seconds later. Electric. Like, I get jitters just thinking about it right now. And if that was a script, if some hack movie writer had tried to write that, they would have been accused of laying it on way too thick.
No, it was, I remember watching him line it up and, like, really taking his time with it. And then I remember realizing internally, like, because I was the scorekeeper, so that time I did know the scores. I was, because I missed the cut by a stroke, and for some reason, I mean, that also, interesting note on this is, in my opinion, that shot, like, saved that world championships. I mean, that world championships was not, like, there was a lot of frustration, like, off the course from players about things that, you know, I feel like the PDGA, like, is really grateful for that shot going in and, like, sort of shadowing everything else that was going on at that Worlds that was kind of coming out. And I think, like, one of those things was they didn't have, like, somehow they didn't have a person set aside to do the official scorecard for the lead card for the final two rounds of Worlds. And that ended up being me, but I had no plans to do it. I was just, I was there to spectate, and the TD looked over at me and he was like, hey, can you do the PDJ live app? Cause, like, I've seen you player. And I was just like, I couldn't believe, what? You don't, this is the world championship. You don't have somebody. So that's how it ended up.
There were definitely some logistical issues that have been documented in some other places. We don't need to rehash it. Nope. But, like, that 2021 Worlds had been pushed back from 2020, which, like, contextually, we look back and see that was a tremendous inflection point in everything about disc golf. If that event had happened in 2020 and there was no COVID, we probably wouldn't have squawked about anything. It would have just been business as usual.
Right.
You go through a couple years of like growth on the pro tour in your various roles. Mm-hmm. And this whole time, you know, you're playing. I've seen you between and during tournaments, like getting your rounds in the evenings and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That was like a given. I mean, I didn't care when, like, what time of day or, like, what hour I had to wake up at. I mean, I remember there was, especially, like, the Jomez year, there was, like, one of the other coworkers I had, his name was Hunter, and he was, like, everybody knows that phase that he was in, which is, like, right when you're really addicted.
Yeah,
like,
you're
so addicted. And so me and him would, like, you know, we'd wake up at, like, 6 a.m., go out and play a course before, like, a, you know, 11, 12-hour workday. I mean, when I was working at Jomez, it was, you know, 11 a.m. till 2, 3 in the morning every mm-hmm. day. So our time, like, to sleep was there, and we were cutting our sleep hours in to go play. And you know, I would try to play whenever I could. I mean, that was always the dream for me. Like, the moment one of my buddies came into the cafeteria in, like, 2016, after we had been playing at that point for 8 years at one course, the moment he came in and sat down and was like, guys, disc golf is real, and we were just like, what? And he was like, I just found it on the internet, like, it's on YouTube, like, there's this whole world. And we didn't care, like, at that time we had no idea. I mean, I bought him a one-time Paul Macbeth Rock 3, and we decided, without having any, we just looked at the name and they were like, you know, who's this Paul Macbeth? And I was just like, well, it has to be, like, some Irish ultimate player, because there's, like, no way that, like, somebody would get their name on a disc. Like, that's not, like, disc golfers, there's no such thing as a pro disc golfer. We were, like, 12. And then he comes in 3 years later, and he's like, look at this. And from the moment I watched Jomez the first round, like, I don't think I did homework for the last 2 years of high school. And that was, like, that then became the dream of just, like, okay, this is, I want to be a pro disc golfer, because I've always wanted to be a professional athlete, like, since I was a kid. It started with baseball, and then it switched to skiing, and then it switched to, like, as you have those, like, hard moments where you're, like,
you discover,
yeah,
I'm not all that.
I'm not all that. And in disc golf, like, I started to feel like I, like, was playing decent, and yeah, I took every chance I could, even when I was on tour to play. Me and Steve would always play together after, Steve Dodge, for those who don't know, we'd always play around at the course after we broke it down each event. And I remember him shooting 5 down bogey free with 2 discs standstill only at the Beast longs,
and chirping about it the whole time.
And he found both the discs, like, in the bottom of the tour trailer, like, before the round. And he was like, oh, look, I've never seen either of these 2 discs, and just standstill only, 5 down bogey free. And I was infuriated. But yeah, we were always trying to play, and that was always the goal. And, like, when I could, like, you know, squeak in, like, at PCS Open last year, I mean, that was a stretch. I mean, I was not supposed to be playing that tournament.
Well, so let's talk about that. Okay. 2022, you go to Europe, and what was the purpose of that?
Well, basically, in, like,
I'm sorry, 2023.
Yep, 2023. So in, like, December of 2022, Paul decided that he wanted to do a big Europe tour. And he basically told Jeff Spring, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to buy a tour card because I'm going to go play a bunch of these European events. And then Jeff kind of, like, looked at his schedule and realized that it was, like, right on path with, like, the events that they had, like, earmarked as the events that were going to be the Euro Tour events that the Pro Tour was going to send DGN to. And basically, he was like, well, these are all our events anyway, so you should just get a tour card. Paul, I think, just wasn't stoked about all the requirements, and if he could avoid the requirements.
I remember hearing about that, yeah.
And so, obviously, like, you as the pro tour, you don't want Paul Macbeth not getting a tour card. It doesn't set, like, a good example for
everybody
else. So, basically, Jeff was just like, well, get this tour card, because these are the events that you're, there are events anyway. And then, like, if you're doing this trip, like, we have DGN. So, you know, Jeff's always thinking about that, which is good. So he's just like, we should do a documentary series, which is great idea. And basically, Paul told me about it in February, and I was just like, wow, that's crazy. You're going to go for 7 weeks. So you're going to have to, like, hang out with one of the DGN guys, you know, for 7 weeks. Like, can you deal with that? Like, how well do you know them? And I was at Jomez at the time, so I did, like, I was really actually laughing at him, mainly just like, I mean, this is going to be your roommate, dude. And then he was just like, oh, dude, I didn't. He like, I don't think he had quite like thought that part through.
Mm-hmm.
And so next thing I hear, basically, Paul's like, well, I'm not going to do it unless Joey's like the filmmaker for this trip.
Is it? Was he getting back at you, or do you guys have a good working relationship?
Yeah, well, we're really good friends. I've known Paul since the first year I was on tour in 2019. I somehow caddied for him at GBO the year that he won it.
And he did turn out to be an Irish Ultimate player, right?
Right, he did. First of all, my office was lead card, right? That's my office. So Paul was there a lot in 2019.
Turns out, yeah.
Turns out he was there a ton. And for those who don't know, Paul is actually a very chatty tournament player. That's like, he more times than not, like, uses talking to someone. He finds somebody to talk to for most of the round to help keep his mind off of stuff.
And he's so good at, like, turning that switch on and off.
Oh my gosh. I mean, he might be the best I've seen at turning the switch. I mean, he talks about it at like that, like a switch. When I caddied for him at GBO, I was just like, because I'd never caddied for anybody, much less, like, that was my first caddying experience ever.
Hmm.
Was Paul at GPO. So, and I was scared. I mean, this was like my hero. And I was just like, what do I do? And he was like, well, you know, just like, what am I supposed to say to you? And he's just like, well, you know, treat it as like a 3-hour conversation about whatever. But like every 2 minutes, we just have to like pause for 30 seconds. And then like, you'll come back and we just pick up where we left off.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, the more you can just like pick up where we left off and continue on, the easier I can forget about whatever shot I just threw. And he's like, I want to forget about every shot. I don't care if they're good
or bad.
I want to forget about every shot. I want to come back to zero every time. And so, you know, we became really good friends over 2019 because whether or not it was like advised by my job, I definitely talked a lot on the camera. Like, not like when I'm filming, but mm-hmm. like I would chat with the players as we're going through the round. And Paul and I chatted a lot. And then, yeah, in 2021, he started the foundation and invited me to be a part of it. And that's like my number one source of like expending my free time hours now. I mean, I've been on every single Paul McBeth Foundation trip now. It's just like 14 of them. And yeah, Paul and I have grown really close. I'm super grateful for what he's done for me. So yeah, basically that's how it happened with Europe. He was just like, Joey's coming, because I've done all the documentaries for the Paul McBeth Foundation.
Hmm.
When I told him about it, I was actually with him in Mexico at our first project filming like a follow-up episode. Basically like 2 years later, here we are now. And so he had just seen me like film 1 week's worth of it. And he's like, okay, well, you can do that 8 more times like in Europe. And I mean, I was fine with it because like I said, this was my point where I was like burning out on filming coverage. I was just getting bored of it. And this was an opportunity to like go do like more creative film working and filmmaking, which is like exactly what I love doing.
Sure. And that's a thread that I've heard from Gatekeeper, that I've heard from other folks, that like the grind of doing the round every day, there's such a template that you don't have that opportunity for creativity.
Right. And even when there are like segments of creativity in that template, like the profile pieces and such, the turnaround time like basically eliminates anything like wildly creative. Like unless you have like some really great idea, like just pop into your head and then you like execute it and it doesn't cost you too much time, then you can like be creative. But like there's not a lot of room for that. And it's just because of the turnaround time. I mean, like you said, everything's pretty structured. So, mm-hmm. like, something that goes off of that structure, it costs time, and time is the most valuable thing for those post-production guys. And, I mean, that is why DGN really switches those guys around a lot. Like, that's the whole point, is variety. Because, like, all those dudes are filmmakers. Like, you know, we like doing... That's the whole reason you like filmmaking, because it's not the same every time, because it's unique. Tracking a disc, boy, I mean, it gets... Once you get good at it, I had so many rounds where my head was, like, completely somewhere else, and I was just, like, going through the motions because I was, like, muscle memory, could track the disc. I mean, I was using, like, 5% of my brain, basically. And
like, clearly in this conversation, the ADHD can be a benefit. Like, you have a memory for stuff. You dive whole hog into whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm interested in, like, let's talk about the play in Europe. Because you're over there to do this doc with Paul.
Yep, yeah, I was over there to do the doc with Paul. You know, without, like, going too much into the weeds, basically, there's just, like, there's a lot of logistical things that need to slowly get worked out as, you know, the Pro Tour like evolves through its startup phase. I mean, like, in financial terms, the Pro Tour is a startup company, right? Mm-hmm. And startup companies, for those who don't know, I mean, they have reputations of like, you know, communication is still getting ironed out, and you know, the workflow sometimes is disorganized, you know, long hours. But it's all like, there's a lot of potential benefit in startups, right? Because if you stay committed and the startup succeeds, then you're in a really good spot, a successful company. Uh-huh. But the Pro Tour is absolutely in that phase right now where they're expanding and those systems are getting set in place and streamlined. But back then, it just didn't exist. And so I was supposed to start filming in Estonia that first week of the trip as episode one. But I didn't have a camera, and so it was just a whole mess, and I felt like I did everything in my power over like 8 weeks to try to have a camera ready, and I just ran into a lot of brick walls and unanswered phone calls, and so yeah, we get to Estonia, I don't have a camera, I'm like talking to Christine on the phone, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do, I like don't have a camera, I was supposed to be here, like, what am I gonna do? And me and Paul were just joking, and he was just like, well, I mean, there's no other Americans here, like, we could just ask and see if they could get you into the tournament if you wanted to play, because I had my bag, and so we asked, and they said sure, and so I was just like, all right, whatever. And then I found out that the camera was gonna be there on Friday, and so at that point I was like, okay, cool, we're just gonna start episode one in Croatia, and those 3 days I'll just use to test everything out, test the equipment. I mean, like, I wanted to have the camera like 3 weeks before I left so I could have all that stuff in place. But, you know, it was that situation. And yeah, I just went in to play Estonian Open. Course was awesome, reminded me of home.
I'm Scott Withers, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I try to convince myself to go practice.
I'm Ellen Woodboom, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I fall asleep.
You know, I spent all of season one in this very ad break saying that we would never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads. But lately, I've had a change of heart. The integrity of this show absolutely has a price. We're talking lake house money. Private island money. Lake house on a private island money. But until that hypothetical benevolent corporate overlord speaks up, though, this show is entirely supported by your support of me and my sponsors. Fish Stamp Discraft discs are available in-store and online at daddydiscgolf.com, dischub.com, and treemagnets.com, and fishdiscgolf.com when I'm not traveling. You can save 10% at Grip Equipment with the code FISHGIFT10 at checkout, unless you're a fool who likes spending full price on disc golf bags. And of course, our name is derived from Disc Golf Bra, whose media channels and website you should visit for outstanding New England content. And now, more mutual hostility between Fish and the guest.
Yeah, I mean, like, everybody, you know, the takeaway from that was like, yeah, I beat Paul, highest American finisher. A lot of people are coming up like, oh my God, you played so good. And I mean, I just averaged my rating. Like, I was 1,008. I shot 1,008, like, on the weekend. I played good rounds, but I didn't, like, you know, Paul just had his lowest average in, like, 14 years. And so I was, like, everybody was just like, oh, my God, you must feel so great. And I just, like, I just felt good. I mean, I felt like I played good, but I didn't feel like I did this Herculean thing to beat Paul McBeth in a tournament. I mean, like, anybody who averaged 1,008 that week would have beat Paul McBeth.
Turns out. I guess there probably weren't expectations since you weren't planning on playing.
No, I was so stoked that I was just like, I was so stoked just to like be there and to play disc golf. It was so unexpected. And after playing the course in practice, not really knowing if I was going to play the tournament, like, I was just like, damn, this would be a sweet course to play in a tournament. And then all of a sudden I got to. So it was nice that I had, like, decided to play all those rounds. And, so basically that was great. And then, like, it's just like wake up time. Cause then the work starts. Like, the camera showed up, you're testing everything, you're getting Paul ready, and we went to Croatia, and basically I signed up for PCS as a joke, not literally as a joke. Like, I was sitting at home with one of my close buddies, Eli Swanson, and we were just looking at tournaments, and because of this little C tier I had played in Mexico with Paul, my rating had gone up 17 points, and first time I had ever been 1,000 rated. I was 1012. I went from 993 to 1012, and or 995 to 1012, and that was like, all of a sudden, we were just joking. Like, he was like, oh, look at all these tournaments you could sign up for, and we were just looking at all the European ones, and he was like, dude, like, look at all these European events that are like half full because it's only open for 10. You could sign up. And at that point, I had an inkling that I was going to Europe. Like, Paul had told me that, like, I was the only one if he was going to do it. And mm-hmm. But we had no tickets. We didn't have anything like settled, but we kind of knew the dates. And so I was just like, well, shoot, like, I'll just sign up for PCS. What's a goofy thing to do? And maybe someone will let me play. And then basically I just couldn't bring myself to drop out. I just like, as it got closer and closer, I still didn't have anybody to like cover for me, and I had asked the pro tour, but obviously, you know, their staff is limited over there. They wanted me to do it. Basically, they were like, if you find someone, you can do it. And that was really cool of them, honestly. And I did end up finding somebody, and I was just like, dude, you owe it to yourself. Like, you're over here busting your butt filming this documentary. There's huge hours, and your dream has always been to do this, and you can actually play this tournament, and your work's gonna let you do it. And like, just like, expend yourself a little bit, you know, just like, just, you're 22, go and just take the full hours. Like, it's gonna be a big week, you're gonna do a lot of work, tons of interviewing. The entire time I wasn't playing, I was like interviewing, shooting. Like, this guy only filled in for me like four of the rounds that Paul was playing, basically.
Okay.
And so, but I was staying with Phil Delaunay. Basically, I asked Phil if there was any way I could get like the first tee time out on the first day, because I wanted to like show this guy, can you, like, I just wanted to, he had never filmed a disc golf round, so I just wanted to like kind of walk him through. What do we got? All right, cool.
Competition still suspended, which means podcast ongoing.
Please stay in your vehicles. For safety, there's active lightning near/on the course. Wow. So I wanted to show this guy where I didn't want him to get hit. I didn't want like something embarrassing to happen, because, you know, Paul was feature card, so that's a huge gallery on DGN. Like, and I know where to stand, obviously, but this, I had no idea if this guy did. I met him the day before. He seemed nice. He was a filmmaker. He knew what he was doing.
Okay,
but
I'm imagining you just like, you go to a bus station and hold up a couple euros or something.
I had met some Norwegians at the Krokol Open like 3 weeks earlier and told them about my dilemma and asked them if they could like do some crowdsourcing,
okay.
And they found someone. Shout out Mats. He was awesome. I teed off super early, and another one, like, I think in 2021, I really didn't play good. I missed cash at every pro tour. I mean, my rating went up 20 points, but I mean, I started touring the year. I was 972. I mean, I only got a tour card because I could afford it. Like, that's what the requirements were back then. You wanted a tour?
Yeah.
Go buy a tour card. Like, yeah. Go spend the $5,000 and you can tour. And now it's crazy, like, how hard it is to get a card.
Yeah, just getting a foot in the door is difficult
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess I'm grateful that I sort of felt that way about, I felt so like pushed towards like taking those little like nudges, basically, mm-hmm. of getting the foot in the door. And yeah, it was just like one of those chances. Same with PCS. I was just like, I can't not do this now. And so, yeah, I just felt like my mindset changed from 2021. I felt like I put a lot of pressure on myself when I went out on tour, and I was just like, you have 1 year to have like a noteworthy moment that like can convince you that you can do this more.
And that's really tough. Like, you have one bad tournament and it puts more pressure on subsequent
mm-hmm.
ones.
Oh, of course. I don't think people understand like the mental work that you have to do as a touring pro. Like, I don't know almost anyone successful on tour who just like has a passive mental state. Like, I mean, maybe Calvin, but like, even Calvin, like, you just like, it is, playing golf is not good for the brain. Playing golf for a living is just like, it can really suck, and you have to like really know how to dig yourself out of deep mental valleys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, obviously going on tour teaches you that. But I put way too much pressure on myself. And by stepping away and taking the Jomez gig and eventually what the DGN gig, every time I played tournaments during that stretch, I was so grateful to just be playing disc golf that, like, I didn't care about my scores and I didn't care about my ratings because, I mean, I really didn't because there wasn't, like, anything to gain. I had a job. I had a salary. I was, like, I was chilling. I didn't need that winnings or that tournament. That wasn't going to affect, like, my livelihood. And I think I thought that a lot too much in 2021. And so it carried into 2023. Like, every tournament I was playing, I was just grateful. Like, I felt like my mental game, like, did a 180. And I was just, like, trying to, like, be upbeat on the course and I wasn't even trying. Like, it just came. And it was the same at PCS. I was just like, holy cow, I'm playing the first ever Elite Series abroad. It's beautiful. The course is amazing. And I was stoked round one because I knew I was going to get back in time for
to,
Paul.
To film Paul.
Yeah, to film Paul. And, yeah, so I played the round and, man, it didn't even feel good. Like, I mean, not in the bad, it did not feel 1060 or 1055, whatever it ended up being. And I don't know. I just, like, the whole time, what was going through my head was, wow, this course is beautiful, and I can't believe I'm playing. I can't believe I pulled this off. And then also, every couple minutes, like, oh, shoot, did I forget to charge, like, this mic? And, oh, did I forget to charge this? And then, like, okay, where am I going to have him stand? Like, how am I going to do this? Like, what am I going to do this afternoon? I was just not, like, I could not have been thinking less about about disc golf, like, about my round. I was just, like, in another place. And finished the round, adding up the scores. All my cards are like, dude, great round, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, huh? Like, and there was, like, a decent little crowd on 18 when I was, like, I had, like, a birdie putt, and I missed it and made my par putt. But I was like 40 people here just, like, kind of watching me. And I was just like, whatever. Like, I gotta get my pizza. I gotta go back to the house. And then I'm walking past Paul and Adam. And Paul's just like, dude, like, leader in the clubhouse. And I'm like, what? And I was just, it was crazy.
Ultimately, that puts you on chase card for the next round. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking quite a bit about, like, mental game, the evolution of that, and how it can affect your play. Sometimes it's good to have those distractions from your play, but there's also the toxicity of being distracted, where you can't flip the switch.
Yeah. Well, the switch has to exist. In my opinion, you have to use, like, physical triggers to get that switch on. For some people, I mean, for me specifically, it's breathing. Like, for me, it's just like, I mean, I don't know. We played together yesterday. I don't know if you heard, but, like, before every shot, big fat exhale. Like, that's my whole thing. It's just like, I want to hear myself breathe out. And that is A, like, a body relaxer, and B, it's like a signal for my brain, like, okay, we're focusing now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're back out after that. And then I relax, like, naturally back into my, like, ADHD state. But, like, that deep breath and out is, like, for me, that's, like, the, okay, now we're going to, like, zero in, pick a chain, and go.
And all it takes is a few seconds once you've done that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, like, sort of the last thing. And I was telling this, me and Trevin Crowe last night were talking about, like, routines. Like, what's your pre-shot routine? What's your pre-putt routine? He was asking me because, I mean, we played with him yesterday.
Yep.
And he was definitely pushing his 30 seconds on a lot of his putts. And he was sort of stunned, actually, after the round. He was like, this is not what I do. Like, I'm like a step up and go kind of guy. And he's like, but he's like, this, I was doing this little, like, thing that kind of was like my version of the breathing. It was his, he, like, did, like, a step back, and that was, like, his trigger to, like, okay, here we go. But he, like, stopped doing that. And I was like, you need to bring back, like, this, like, this thing that tells you, like, okay, here we go now. And so I don't have, like, a pre-putt or pre-shot routine, but when I do that exhale, it's, like, less than a second I'm going. Like, that's my, okay.
Sure.
And I basically get comfortable. And once I feel comfortable, then it's deep breath, and then it's go. And that's, like, the last thing that happens.
Yeah, okay. So a couple episodes ago to start this year, I had John Kirkland on. Mm-hmm. And John was talking about the importance of a pre-shot routine being exactly the same every time.
Yep.
And what you are doing is isolating the really critical part of that. The part that works for you is deep breath, step up, and rip it. And anything that precedes that is a little bit of white noise. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as it gets you to that point where your pre-shot routine can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a controlled environment, having the ideal pre-shot routine every time is what you should do. It's like, trust the process, right? Just go exactly through the motions. But first of all, like, we are playing in like one of the least controlled environments that exists, which is like outside. So
with things that love to catch wind.
Well, right. And if you're like going through your pre-shot routine and then you're like, you know that your grip isn't right, and you're like so beholden to your pre-shot routine that you just like continue to do your routine even though your grip's not right. Like, that's why I don't set a specific, like, this is exactly what I do before everything, because my grip might not be the same, or there might be a gust of wind, or like, it just, for me, it like pigeonholes the ability to like call audibles, as I like to say, like calling an audible on the course. And so that's why I just chose to do, because I used to think try what John was talking about, which is that like the identical thing, because I saw it with free throws in basketball, but that's a very controlled environment in my opinion.
Same distance, same height, same everything.
Yeah. And there's like, I mean, I imagine, I suppose your grip could change, but boy, I mean, those guys, like the little two dribbles, I mean, they are really trying to do exactly the same thing every time. So yeah, for me, it's the breath work.
Cool. As a kind of broader question, do you feel like there has been a resistance in the public perception of Joey Tamale, the player, when everybody who's kind of in disc golf knows that you came from more of a media background?
No, I mean, for me, it's been the opposite. It's so cool, honestly. Like, I've got nothing but support from everyone. It's like, I feel like so many people are so invested in like this story, because it's like a unique story, and I don't know. I mean, I would like to think I made a lot of friends working in the industry. Obviously, like, I talk probably more than anybody else in the disc golf industry, and so I met a lot of people, and you know, I do my best to try to be really friendly with all of them. And I remember like PCS Open. I mean, that's why I want to play good, because after that first round, even that second round, dude, like every staff person that I had worked it with, like, was so stoked. Like, it wasn't even just like they were coming up to be nice to me. Like, they were losing their minds because this media guy, like, was like out there, like one of them was out there like competing with the boys. And I mean, like, everybody who films for the Pro Tour or any like disc golf filming company, they're all players, they're all disc golfers. Like, if they could be pro disc golfers, if they had the skills, they would do it, right? I mean, that's the nature of these touring industries, right? Like, music, sports, like, if all the people working in that industry, if they had the physical and mental gifts to be the athletes, they would. In my opinion, like 90% of them.
This is Bill Murray, Cinderella story.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I guess that's why the staff has been like so great, is because they are watching like someone actually try that. All I want to do is like play good to make them proud, because how I felt at PCS was just like, I'm just like, oh my God, I just made all these people's week, because like, what a crazy story. And I mean, even listening like Brian Earhart, like the way, you know, him and Nate were like talking about it on the broadcast of like me, you could tell it meant like a lot to them, because they knew me, and I was like one of the staff guys, and I don't know, I feel so much support. Everybody I've talked to, including fans, including friends and people back home, everybody's been like so stoked to see you step out from the camera and like go do this. Like, I haven't seen like a single negative thing about it. And I haven't looked hard, but
maybe
don't. Well, they exist. There's if you want to go in the deep dive Reddit world, you can find some Joey Tamale Reddit hate threads if you really want to dive. There's some funny ones. I laugh at them. But yeah, it's been unbelievable. I'm very grateful for all the people that I've been able to make friends with as a staff person, and I feel lucky that they, you know, are that invested in this story I'm trying to write.
All right. Well, Joey, thank you so much for joining me. I too am proud of your ability to jump on and find success in kind of a new venture for yourself. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to lavish praise on me, you can find me on Instagram and whatever the fuck Twitter is at fish58320. And if you hated this podcast and need to yell about it somewhere other than Reddit threads about Joey Tamale, where can folks find you?
Well, you can find me on my Instagram at jtamalito. And as a sneak peek, you can look at Calvin Heinberg's Instagram because that is me doing 90% of the filming this year. So if that's a fun little tidbit, I will be doing a lot of his content as well. So
cool. And do you have tour discs or other ways folks can support you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have, we'll be having some hexes coming out with MVP. We have, you can get my stamp on any stock disc at Another Round. At checkout, you can just add my hot stamp to it, which I think is pretty sweet, for only $5. And then my signature jersey just came out with Cardinal Disc Golf, so you can go to Cardinal Disc Golf, check that out, and I think you'll like it because it's baseball themed. I went for like a vintage baseball look.
Ooh, got, okay.
Like, the, it's like cream.
Is it wool?
No, but it's got like that old look. It's cream color as like the base, and then mm-hmm. it has like these little kind of like burgundy like flares with the collar and the stripes. So it looks like kind of a classic baseball jersey.
Neat. All right, well, go check it out, and we'll have some more Joey in a couple weeks for a baseball AL preview. Joey, thank you.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on this week's Fish Golf Broadcast. Join us next week to fritter away more of your ever-waning life force on two jabronis talking about Frisbee. Please support the show, if you're able, by shopping for fish stuff at fishdiscgolf.com, Daddy Disc Golf, Disc Hub, Tree Magnets, and Disc Golf Bras websites. You can still save 10% at Grip Equipment with the code FISHGIFT10, and please tell a friend about this show. Unless you don't have any friends, but that's your problem, not mine.